Right. Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvos is daf Ayin Tes. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf as long as Zechnish Maslibe Gavriel Bashmo. We started the 8th parak of Ksuvos yesterday. And our topic of this parak is Nechse Malug. Nechse Malug means that properties that fall to her after she gets married. So it's hers. That's not up for discussion or debate. But the Chachamim allowed the husband to afford the privilege and the rights to the parus. So if it's a piece of property, so what happens to that piece of property is that that property is hers. It's name it's hers and title is hers. It's but the husband is entitled and has the rights to the fruit that grow on it. Why should that be? Why the Chachamim make this kind of institution? So we learned earlier in the Masechta, going all the way back to the Mems, and Mem Zayin, I believe. So that Pirka Peres Tachas Pirkana. In other words, the exchange that the Chachamim created, the financial obligations that the husband and wife had towards one another, which is an institution created by the Chachamim, require that he has to make financial obligations to her, and she in return has to make financial obligations to him. So the Nechse Malug is one of those financial obligations where the properties that go to her, that come to her after she gets married, she has the Karen, she has the principal of that property, it's hers, but the Paris are enjoyed by the husband. Now when I say enjoyed, by the way, you understand, I really mean owned. I mean it's his, it belongs to him, it's the husband now becomes the owner of the Paris. Yesterday's discussion, the first mission that we went through yesterday, went through four different scenarios in terms of when, if and whenever she could sell her properties. In other words, because the husband has the rights to the Paris, so that obviously is going to be an impediment to a sale. So if you remember the Mishnah we saw yesterday, the Mishnah gave four different scenarios in terms of when, if in fact she could sell. The first case of the Mishnah we saw yesterday was where she gets the property before even Erisin, so she can sell it. Now obviously it goes without saying she could sell it before Erisin, meaning then she doesn't even have a husband. It's Pashit. I mean, it's nothing to talk about. But what about after Erisin, but before Nisuin? So if you remember yesterday, Beis Shammai Bishlel says she could sell. She's allowed to sell those properties. If let's say the properties came to her after Erisin, she inherited the properties after Erisin, so then we had a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel whether or not lichatchila she could sell it, but all in the agreement that bidyeva she could certainly sell the properties. If she inherited it after Erisin, and obviously we're talking about where she sold it before Nisuin. Let's say she inherited the properties before Nisuin, meaning during her Erisin, and then she gets married. That was the third case that we saw yesterday. Sorry. Let me do. I jumped to the fourth case. The third case in the Mishnah we saw yesterday is where the properties fell to her after Nisuin. So then we have absolutely no debate. That is officially Nechse Malug property. So that means that the property is hers and the Paris are enjoyed by the husband, and therefore his rights to Paris forbid her from selling that property. And even bidyeved, even if she sold the property, that property is going to be taken away because she had no right to sell the property. Let's say she inherited the properties before Nisuin and she sold it after Nisuin, so bidyeved, the Mishnah says she can sell the property. That's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. If you remember, the conclusion of the Gemara that we saw yesterday was Rabbi Seinu, and the opinion of Rabbi Seinu, Chazru v'Nimnu, this is the last thing we saw yesterday, on Ayin Chesam and Beis. After a lengthy discussion, the Gemara then points out that the halacha does not follow our Mishnah, but rather the halacha follows like a more later shita amongst the Tanaim. There was a, so to say, a new position that was taken, but it was still amongst the Tanaim. The Gemara quoted a brisa that Ben Shanafala Chalotisars, Ben Shanafala Mishinisars, Vinises, meaning it doesn't matter when she acquired the property. She could have acquired the property during Nisuin, before Nisuin, after Erisin, or even before Erisin. It does not matter. Once she gets married, meaning married through the second stage of marriage, Nisuin, Habal Motzi Miyad Lekucha, she no longer has the right to sell that property. So, any property she has, inherited or acquired at any point in time, once she enters the Nisuin, those lands are locked. Locked meaning that although she still is the owner of the land, but the husband's entitled to the Paris, and therefore she cannot sell those properties. That's the conclusion that we saw yesterday. And that's in fact the halacha. So now we move on. Mishnisis Elav Elam Odim. We are continuing now in the Gemara. We're 9 Chesmon Beis. We're at the two dots towards the bottom of the Amud. So the Gemara discusses now the following. The Mishnah says that Mishnah Nisei says, once she gets married, Eilav Eilav Modim. That's back to the Mishnah. Now remember, back to the Mishnah means the Mishnah is describing a scenario where she inherited the properties after she gets married. Okay. Lema Tanila Tekanasusha. Here's what bothers the Gemara. The Gemara seems to be repeating, the Mishnah seems to be repeating that which we already learned as Takanas Usha. Do you remember back on Daf Nun? We learned about a number of institutions that were made in Usha. After the destruction of the Second Temple, the Sanhedrin went into Galus. They went into an exile. 10 different locations where they were exiled. One of those locations is called Usha, somewhere up in the north, in Israel. So they made a number of institutions over there. One of them was Amar Rav Yossi Bar Bechanina Beushit Kino Aisha Shemachra Benechse Malog Bechaya Bala Umesa Abamosi Mealakuchos. That if the institution was, is that if a woman sold her Nechse Malog in the lifetime of her husband and then she dies, so the husband is allowed to extract that property from the hands of the buyer. That was an institution made in Usha. What is that? In other words, that's an institution made in Usha. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Meaning, that's the basic halach of Nechse Malog. So basically, bothers the Gemara that what exactly did they institute in Usha? Meaning, basically, they're just repeating the halach of Nechse Malog. So Masnisen, so the Gemara says like this. No. Masnisen bechayeha ulaperos. Takanas Usha begufa shokarka ulachamisa. So the explains Rashi. Now we're going to go over Rashi's explanation of the Gemara. There are other ways to explain the Gemara, but as we traditionally do, we follow Rashi in terms of the simple pshat in the Gemara. Masitzim bechayer. Take a look at Rashi. Kamar haba motzi kidelecho peros bechayeha. The when our Mishnah says that her sale of a land is going to be prevented because he has the rights to the pears, that means that while she's alive and when she sells the property, so the husband goes to the buyer and the husband says to the buyer, look, my wife sold you that property, she had no right to sell you that property, I am rightfully taking back that property. That property belongs to me. Ula achar mosa, Rashi then goes on to say, but then what happens after she dies? Yachzir hakarka lelokeach. So then the property goes to the buyer. Meaning that, again, let's go back to the basic idea. She's still the owner of the land. When she's selling a land, so what is she selling? She's selling, she's handing over the title. What the husband can say to the buyer is as follows. Look, she has no right to do that. Meaning, and when she has no right to do that, what does that mean? It means that, of course, it's hers, and of course, she could, in theory, sell it, but I have the payros. So there's no point in the sale now, currently, as long as she's alive, because I'm entitled to the payros. But based on our Mishnah, what happens when she dies? In other words, she did transfer title, she did sell the land, so after she dies, what's going to end up happening now is that the buyer of the land is now going to acquire the land. He already acquired it, but now because the husband no longer has his payros of the land, so now the buyer can successfully take the land. Okay, so that's what would have been had we just had our Mishnah and just had the basic halacha of Nechse Malog. What did they institute in Usha? Va'asu be'usha. Continue in Rashi, v'takon the afilu gufa shokarka yorishabaal, and what in the institution in Usha is that the sale is blocked totally, meaning that when she sells the land and she's married and the husband has the rights to the payros, that rights to the payros will prevent her from even transferring title. So obviously there's going to have to be a reimbursement sometime along the way, but what Usha's institution accomplished is that it blocked the sale in totality. So now when she dies, so that land is going to go to the husband, because we know the halach is that the husband is yoresh, he inherits all the assets of his wife. So it'll just simply go to the husband. So that's the double level of the basic halach of Nechse Malog, coupled now with the institution of Usha.
But didn't the husband was entitled to Nechse Malog because he was going to redeem her in case of she would be...
That's why the Chachamim instituted it. Good, that's okay, the reason why.
Now she's dead.
Good, so correct.
He's no longer obligated to redeem her.
Absolutely correct. So in other words...
Why would he be entitled to...
So before Usha, you're right. In other words, before Takanas Usha, so that means that she could sell the land. And again, she's transferring title, but the husband says, as long as I'm alive and as long as I'm entitled to payros, so you don't get anything. So he says to the buyer. But once the wife dies, so now he no longer gets the payros. Exactly right. He no longer gets the payros. So now the land is goes to the buyer. In other words, he no longer has any rights to the land. So that's correct. And Usha, what they instituted is that because he has Peros, because he's entitled to Peros, so therefore she gets. I'm sorry, the sale is totally blocked. Okay, that's.
And he inherits.
And then he's going to inherit. Okay, Rabbi Shimon.
If she has children from prior marriage, it wouldn't go to them.
The husband's Yorish, a wife min haTorah. No, right. The husband's Yorish. Right, we'll get to that another point. Rabbi Shimon Cholek Bein Nechasim. Now, going back to the Mishnah and finishing up the Mishnah brought in at the very end the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that the husband does not get Peros of all lands, or I spoke too soon, of all of her assets that come into the marriage. Rabbi Shimon makes a distinction. Now, in the Mishnah, just to reread the words of the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Cholik ben Nechasim l'Nechasim. The difference between different types of assets. Nechasim ha-yiduim l'ba'al, lo timkor. V'imach ravenasa batal. If the husband knew about these properties, so then she has no right to sell them. However, she'inam yiduim l'ba'al, but if she has, I'll say right now, offshore properties, but not, let me just translate the Mishnah literally. If she has lands that are not known to the husband, so then lo simkor, so she still, in principle, shouldn't sell the land. However, if she sold those lands, so then the sale would be a valid sale. And it only begs the question, what's the difference? Meaning, good, there's a distinction, but what does that distinction actually mean? So that's a Gemara's question. So Elohein Yiduin, the Elohein She'ena Yiduin. So what are the ones that, what are properties that are considered known, and what are properties that are considered not known? I'm Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, Yiduin Mikarka, She'ena Yiduin Metaltalin. So Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina says known is a reference to real estate. Everyone knows about properties. Properties are public knowledge, even to this very day. Right? Every sale is public knowledge, and so therefore property is public knowledge. So if there's a property, so even if she doesn't currently have the property, but let's say her father or her uncle had a property, and she inherited it. So when the husband married her, he knew, in the back of his mind, that, okay, in other words, I'm going to marry her, and there's a potential windfall when I marry her because I know about her father's properties. So that's considered Yiduin. But according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, if it's metaltalin, if it's movables, anything not connected to the ground, so that's considered Einan Yiduin. Where if she inherits that after they get married, so then, again, lichas chila, she shouldn't sell it, but b'di'evin, the sale is in fact a valid sale. That's one opinion. The Gemara brings in a second opinion, Rav Yochanan Amar, Eilav Eile Yiduin Hain. No, they're both considered Yiduin. So if they're both considered Yiduin, so then the obvious question is, what is Einan Yiduin? The Eile Hain She'Einan Yiduin, Kol She Yosheves Kan, V'Nafla Nechasim Ebedinas Hayam. If let's say they're sitting over here, and a land was inherited to her from a distant cousin. But now when I say distant, let me just say it simply, a distant relative. But distant over here meaning actual physical distance, meaning somewhere on the other side of this planet. So she had a relative, he died, and he inherited. He simply did not know of the existence of the relative and or the land. So in other words, Einan Yiduin is understood in the most literal sense, meaning he didn't know about it because it wasn't here. It was somewhere else on this planet. Tanya Namalcha, the Gemara quotes the Braisa that supports this opinion of Rav Yochanan. Elu Hein She'inan Yiduin. These are the properties that are considered unknown to the husband. Koshe Yeshev is common. Nafalav Nechazim. Medina Sayam. The Braisa says exactly what Rav Yochanan said. Of course, you can flip the order around because Rav Yochanan's an Amora. But Rav Yochanan echoes the sentiment of the Braisa that the properties that are that were a distance away, so that when the husband married this woman, he simply did not know of the existence of his properties. So that's considered properties which are Einan Yiduin. So that means now that if she sells those properties, if she inherited the properties after she gets married, so b'di'evit she can sell those properties. L'chachil she shouldn't, but b'di'evit she's allowed to do so.
Does it have to be above an ocean or above a sea? Because it says b'mdinot
hayam. That's just the Gemara's description of Yenim, somewhere off. Okay.
After the sum, uncle dies and they actually get, so that kind of property isn't really hidden, but
Hidden simply means, hidden in this context means the husband didn't know about it. Meaning the idea here is that when a man marries a woman, so not only does he know what she currently owns, but she also, but there's also holdings that are expected. And expected holdings are, you know, in his mind as well. Mm-hmm. So that in the event that she does, when she does inherit them, so even at the time of the marriage, the husband already knew about it. So he had his mind, he has mind on it, and that gives him a legal right to that land. Meaning, again, not the land, but the peros. Right. Okay. And now, for the next half of an amud, so we talk now about shelters. Okay, so I am not the accountant over here. I told you, every single Jew, this is my unsubstantiated opinion. Every single Jew is hardwired to become an accountant or a restaurant owner. Okay, those are my. it's in our DNA. Again, you could please accept that for what that is. That's just absolute nonsense. But I firmly believe that this is so. And then now we get back to Gemara learning. So I'm not the accountant over here, but in other words, we all basically understand that sometimes you want a shelter and sometimes you want certain institutions or governments to not know about certain assets. Okay, so obviously it's not right, and we're not talking here about ethics and morals and the propriety. We're speaking just in strict legalities. And the Gemara now wants to know, could she possibly shelter a land so that her husband doesn't either know about it? Okay, very, very well said. But right now, let's even say that the husband knew about it, or simply put, the husband is not going to be able to get his hands on it. The way we're going to introduce this discussion over here is through a incident, through a story. Ha'iyisusa, we're on the very bottom of Ayin Chesamad Beis. Ha'iyisusa debai de tav rechinu lenachsa migavra. So there was a woman who wanted to basically have her properties flee her husband. Or, put in a simpler sentence, she wanted to shelter the property from her husband so that when she gets married, obviously she's doing this before the marriage, so when she gets married, her husband's not going to be able to have a lock on that land by having the rights to the peros and preventing her from selling it. So, what did she do? Kas veninu li barta. So what she does is she writes the property over to her daughter. So in other words, she transfers the title of the property over to her daughter. So
the daughter is old enough to be...
Now, Rashi over here fills in some more details. Very interesting Rashi. Take a look at the bottom Rashi in the Amud. Amana Haisa, so Rashi says she's a widow, obviously. I mean, she has a daughter. So I understand she, you know, could have had the daughter without being a widow, but let's assume the best, as Rashi does. Amana Haisa, Vadli Hinase. So she's a widow and she's going to get married now. The Haisa Mikademis Venos Nasan Lebita. So what does she do? So she gifts over the properties to her daughter. Kidela Havriach Zechus Ba'ala Mehem. So that the land is no longer going to be within the zechus of her husband, of her upcoming husband. Shelo yizak kebehem. So he doesn't have his zechus in that land. Vehodia le'edim. And Rashi says she makes it perfectly clear to the witnesses who were there at the transfer of title, and she says to the witnesses, "Gentlemen, please understand, I'm doing this for one specific reason, so that my husband doesn't get it." She'ein matana zu matana, and mind you, by the way, it's important information from her standpoint, because she doesn't want her daughter at a later point in time to say, what do you want, Mom? You want the property that you transferred over to me? That's mine. So she doesn't want that to happen. So she tells the witnesses that, look, this is not a real gift. Shein matana zu matana. Ela lahavriach. Velo shetizka behem abas. In other words, I'm just sheltering this property from my husband. I don't want my husband to get at this property. So therefore, I'm writing it over to my daughter. The im tit alman hu hi otit karesh. So that in the event that, let's say this marriage doesn't work out, and I come back now as a single woman, so then I'm going to get the property back. Wonderful. Okay, so that is what she's now attempting to do. Kasvinal Barta, Inseve, the Igrisha. So I guess she was a bit prophetic. Or she created her own bad luck by doing this. Either way, she got married, she got a divorce. And also come to Rav Nachman. And now her daughter's sitting with that property and with the with the title, and her name, and her name's on the title. And mom goes over to the daughter and says, "Okay, sweetie, honey, right? Okay, give me back my property." And the daughter looks at her mom and says, "Yeah, it's mine." So also they come into Rav Nachman. So the case comes in front of Rav Nachman. So Kai Rav Nachman l'shari. So what does Rav Nachman do? He takes the shari and he tears it up. So the wait. Let's first get through it, and then you can ask. So Kari Rav Nachman l'shtari. So Rav Nachman tears up the shtar. Also Rav Anan l'kame de Mar Ukva. So Rav Anan now gives the report to Mar Ukva. So in other words, Rav Nachman his decision is going to be called into question. Rav Nachman obviously feels that there is no validity to this document whatsoever. In other words, and now you understand the Rashi that we saw together, meaning because it was clear, she made it clear from the very beginning that the only reason why she was doing this was to shelter from her husband, and so therefore this document, this transfer of title, has no validity whatsoever. And so what Rav Nachman did is he tore it up. Fine. Again, there's much to discuss. Let's see the Gemara play this out. And now Rav Nachman's decision itself is going to be called into question. So also Rav Anan coming to Mar Ukva. So Rav Anan goes and gives a full report to Mar Ukva. As Rashi points out over here, Mar Ukva was the Av Beis Din. He was a Supreme Court judge. He was the head. So in other words, even though Rav Nachman obviously was ahead of a Beis Din, but he wasn't the Av Beis Din. He wasn't the chief head. So the whole matter was reported to Mar Ukva. Amrlei Chazi or Rav Nachman. Sorry, I'll read the words carefully. Chazi Mar Nachman Chakla Heich Mekari Shtar Dinshe. So now Rav Anan, when he gives the report, doesn't seem to be giving a very objective report, as he says, "Look at this Nachman Chakla." Chakla is a very strong language in this context. It means a peasant, right? I know it's strong. So look, Heich Mekari Shtar Dinshe. Look how he tears up documents, meaning that's a legal document. And Rav Nachman just tore it up. That's crazy. And so basically, Rav Anan's reporting to Mar Ukva, that was malfeasance. That was not properly done, what Rav Nachman did. So Amar Lei, so Mar Ukva says, Emily Izigufa, do of the Echiave. Do me a favor, could you fill me in with all the details before I formulate any opinion whatsoever? So Amalei Achi Achiava. So Rav Anan tells Mar Ukva exactly what occurred. Amalei Shtar Mavreches Kamart. So Mar Ukva hears now and he understands that this is nothing more than Shtar Mavreches. Shtar Mavreches meaning that the whole purpose of the document was to evade. And she's doing it to evade her husband, that the property would evade her husband. Amar Rabbi Chani Lai Bar Idi Amar Shmuel. This is now Mar Ukva quoting a tradition that he got all the way back to Shmuel. Mora Hora Ani. Shmuel says Mora Hora Ani, which in of itself sounds like, you know, I'm a posek. But Rashi explains over here in this context it means now Talti Rishus Meresh Galusa, meaning I'm authorized to paskin on these matters. That if I see such a document, I'll tear it up. Now, mind you, by the way, Rav Nachman was the student of Shmuel. So in this context, works out perfectly. So in other words, Mar Ukva says, I have a tradition from Shmuel that Shmuel says that when I see a document that was created, a title that was created for the sole purpose of evasion, so I would tear up the document. The document has no validity. So in other words, Mar Ukva basically says to Rav Anan, you know what Rav Nachman did? He was right. Good for him. Amalei Ravala Rav Nachman. So time am I, lo shavik inish nav, I'm sorry, time am I. So now Rava himself questions directly Rav Nachman. Meaning, so now we're back to Rav Nachman. So again, so it was reported to Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva says he did good. I have a tradition from Shmuel. Any document that's created strictly for the purposes of evasion has no validity, should be torn up, good for him. Now Rava turns to Rav Nachman himself and questions the ruling of Rav Nachman. So time am I, de lo shavik inish nav shevi yav lachrini. Look, you know, when do you have the right to tear up a document? Because we know, generally speaking, as follows. You need some assets in this world. And you're not going to give away all your assets. And if you're gifting or giving away all your assets, you're doing so for one simple reason, for the purposes of evasion. And so therefore, it's clear that you're doing that because you don't really want to create a kinyan. You just want to evade. So hani mililachrine. The Gemara says, good. In general, I understand that. And I understand that in general, going back to the ruling of Shmuel, Shmuel says that you tear up a document that's for the purpose of avracha. Good. That's if you're gifting it to some stranger. Aval lebarta yahiva. But over here, it's normal for parents to gift over to their children. Now again, usually you wait till you die and then it goes through Yerusha. But some people, and the Gemara has numerous scenarios in which, prior to the death, the parents gift over their estate over to the children, and the expectation is that, as far as the rest of life is concerned, the children will take care of them. Good. So over here, it could be that this transfer was not strictly for the purpose of evasion, because over here it's going from the mother to the daughter. Maybe it was a legitimate transfer. So the Gemara says, "Afilo hachi b'makom barta nafsha adif ala." So the Gemara says, "No, look, you know, we love our children, but not at the expense of ourselves. Meaning, we'll sacrifice for our children, but not everything. So, no, I still think that if you find that someone's gifting over the entire estate over to their children, they're doing so only to avoid, only to evade. There's no other explanation, and so therefore, once again, Rav Nachman defends his position. Rav Nachman says, "I was right. That was a transfer just simply for the purpose of evasion. You tear up the document." Yeah.
Why couldn't she choose a son by Zev?
She could, but then Stone Barzel means she loses it.
What?
She loses the property, then it goes to the husband. Now the husband is... She loses the property in total. Then Sombrazel means that she's going to be writing the value of the property will be written into the shtar, but the land is then going to go to the husband.
When she gets divorced, she'll get
reimbursed for the property.
Right, that's what she wanted.
What? No, she would know. She wanted, not only did she want to keep the property, she wants the Paris as well.
Oh, she has a
Paris. Yeah.
What they need is an intentionally defective grant of trust.
I knew, David. I knew. I know. I know. This is your area. I knew that was coming.
So which part was canceled? The gift or?
In other words, there was no transfer whatsoever.
So there was no gift to the daughter.
Nothing. Which will then prompt the Gemara later on to ask a very simple question. So that means it belongs to the husband, right? Okay. So stay tuned. We'll get to that point.
If the husband finds out about this transaction and she's taken captive, could he renege on
it? Right. That's a great question. I don't know the answer, but that's great. In other words, she's deliberately, she's deliberately refusing payers to him. So okay. So no more pure kara. It's a great. I don't know the answer, but it's a great question.
If she doesn't bring anything, he doesn't have to.
Well, I understand that, but she's going out of her way so that... Yeah. Okay. Meitzvei, the Gemara challenges based on the Braisa. I wrote, Shetav Riach Nechsei Mi Baala Ketzad Hi Osa. So, let's say a woman wants to evade the estate, her assets from her husband. So, how does she do it? This is a Braisa talking. Ketzad Hi Osa. Kosev Eshtar Pasam Lacherim. Divrei Rav Shimon Gamliel. So, she writes Shtar Pasim for others according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Okay. Shtar Pasim. We've gone over this a number of times, but let's go over this again. Shtar Pasim basically is writing a note of indebtedness, but there was actually no transfer of money. Right? Let's say I go into a partnership, into a relationship, and they want to know, like, who are you? Like, you have money? You have any assets? Meaning, how do we know that you're a man of means? So, it's highly unethical. Number of other places, the Gemara speaks about how it is an Isser in the Torah to have such staros. But basically, what you will do is you'll ask a friend, look, do me a favor. Can you write me a note? Write me a note, an IOU, that you owe me $1 million, $2 million.
I owe you $1 million.
No. You want to look. You want to present yourself as being wealthier.
Right.
So you ask a friend to write you. I understand. It does. It's not the exact same thing over here.
Right.
I'm with you. But just in general, I'm just explaining the basic idea of shtar pasim. Shtar pasim is just basically you write me a letter that you owe me $1 million, $2 million. Look, you and I understand. You don't.
I'm not going to ask for it.
I just want to go in to that meeting with those gentlemen, and I want them to see that this is what I have. You know, and I got money. So that's called, right. It's a fake letter of credit. It's not a real letter of credit. So it's terrible. But fine. So that's now in this context. So basically, according to Rosh Hashanah Megamliel, so she's basically going to do the same. In other words, she'll write a note saying that, you know, so-and-so owns this property. Okay. So according to Rosh Hashanah Megamliel, the Chachamim Omrim Ratzim Etzachek Ba. And the Chachamim say, what are you talking about? If the recipient wants, the recipient of the property wants, he could laugh at her. Laugh at her, meaning, explains Rashi, is that you wrote over the property to me, and now you want it back saying you never really gave it to me? But listen, you gave it to me. We have a document. We have witnesses. It's mine. Wrote them at Sachigba. Achetichtov lo mehayom ulechesh erza. But rather, what you have to do is, if you want to hide a property from your husband before you marry him. And by the way, I hope all this is clear, and I hope I'm being clear. All this can only be done before the marriage. After the marriage, it's too late. So what you do is you write over the property to somebody else before you get married, and you have to use the following verbiage. You have to say that I'm gifting it to you mehayom ulechesh erza, today or when I'm good and ready. In other words, the actual transfer is not necessarily going to be today. It'll be today or at a point in the future when I'm ready. Now, obviously, that's in the world of kinyanim, that doesn't make for the best kinyan. In other words, usually a transfer means transfer. Over here, she's saying basically, I'm tentatively transferring it over to you, either now or lecha'eretz at a future date. So, time is the kas v'lahachi, alo kas v'lahachi, kanin lokeach. So now, we're going to assume that we don't go like Rosh Hashanah Gamliel. We're going to assume like we go like the Chachamim. So that the Chachamim give a very limited and very specific way of her evading her husband, in that you have to write a document and you have to use that verbiage of Me'ayom Olechesh Erza. If you don't use such verbiage, so then the document is in fact a good document. And so, back to Rav Nachman. And back to challenging Rav Nachman. What did Rav Nachman do with that document? He tore it up. Mm-hmm. Tore it up? Based on the brisa we just learned, you don't tear it up. It's valid. That transfer was valid. So once again, the Gemara is back to challenging Rav Nachman. I'm Rav Zera, lo kasha, abikula, abimiksasa. So Rav Zera says, once again, we're going to make the following distinction. If she's gifting away all her property, that's shtar mavriach. That is just nothing more than her evading and avoiding her husband, having to hide the properties from her husband. That Rav Nachman and Shmuel, going back to his Rebbe, so they would tear up such a document. That you tear up. But miksasa, but if you're just giving away some of your estate, in other words, you're not looking to hide all your assets, but you're only looking to hide some of them, so that you have to use the specific language that was given to us in the Braisa, and if you use that language, fine. But if you don't use that language, then the transfer is a valid transfer. Obviously, the document is a correct document. It's a legal document. And obviously, you wouldn't tear it up.
What's the benefit for her in terms of fruit plus after she gets married for some period of time? Say, for 10 years she's married. What happens to the fruit with this verbiage that she puts in?
So that means now that I'm going to give away the Gemara's answer. It basically means now that this is property that is unknown to the husband. If it's unknown to the husband, so that means that the fruit doesn't go to her. Now, exactly at that point, after that point in time, I myself am not perfectly clear. Meaning, is that the recipient gets the fruit? Is that the recipient basically, she gets the fruit? In other words, I'm not 100% sure what exactly is going to happen to the fruit during that period of time. Mm-hmm. But in other words, but it's not going to go to the husband.
But the 10 years that she asked, doesn't know.
Right. The ilo kanina lokeach niknina ba. So now the Gemara asks a very simple question. So let's go back all the way to the beginning of the whole story and really the beginning of this discussion. So now we just introduced ourselves to the idea that if she is writing over all her assets to somebody else, even her own daughter, So that is the Shtar Mavriach and Rav Nachman Shmuel, and the halach is he tear it up, meaning it's simply not. It has no validity. Now, if it has no validity, so aren't we back at square one? So that means now that if the shtar has no validity, so that means that it belongs to the husband.
Why write? I mean, there's no validity to why write?
Well, it was an attempt. Remember, the whole thing started with an incident where this is what the woman wanted to do. And the response was, Rav Nachman and Shmuel say, okay, we're going to tear it up. The Gemara never advocated. The Gemara just simply said, if a woman tries to do it, it's going to be unsuccessful. If that's true, so now it belongs to the husband. So now we never actually received an indication that it doesn't go to the husband. But from the Gemara's question, we can now deduce that the husband doesn't get the peros. So that assumption is built into the question. And now that we have that assumption, so now let's re-ask the question. So if the Shtar Havracha has no validity whatsoever, and a transfer has no validity whatsoever, so shouldn't it go back to the husband? And shouldn't the husband enjoy the fruit? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Asu'um, Kenechasim She'enam Yedu'un Labal, Va'aliba de Rabbi Shimon. What basically is created with this, with her action, is that, granted, the transfer is no good. Granted, if that document was trying to be used and based in would tear it up. All that's true. But what it does do, however, is that now it creates this idea that the husband doesn't know about this property. And as a result, wait just one second. As a result of that, we're going to have to rely on the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, which, by the way, parenthetically, certainly sounds like that the Gemara is ruling like Rabbi Shimon, although the Gemara never said that clearly, where Rabbi Shimon made this distinction. But we're going to then rely on the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that if it's a property that the husband didn't know about, so such a property, she does have the right to sell, and by definition, that also means that he's not going to get the peros of that property.
If the husband finds out about it, can the husband tear up the
shtar? Yeah, so, right, so, oh, can the husband tear up the shtar?
Yeah.
Well, ostensibly the answer is yes, and really built into that question is the husband also going to enjoy the peros? And once again, the answer sensibly would be yes. Meaning this, it's a tricky position. Lands that are not known to the husband. Okay, so that means then that the only thing that needs to change then is the knowledge of the husband. Once the husband finds out about it, so then that means that presumably that land now becomes right, not his, but right to his benefit, where he can enjoy the produce of that land.
He wants to get the fruits, right? He wants to get it. Otherwise, he wouldn't be.
Agreed.
Doing.
Agreed.
So if she gets the fruits, she has an income.
Okay.
Yeah. The income belongs to the husband.
Okay. No. Her earnings belong to her husband.
Right. That's her name.
No. In other words, her earnings belong to the husband, but not her property.
No, but the fruits are her earnings.
Okay. Maybe. Okay. All right. Let me think about that a little bit more. I'm not sure. I understand what you're saying. Okay. I appreciate what you're asking. It's as it is right now. Let's just deal with the basics, and then you want to deal with the, you know, what if. Okay. Enough luck safim yilak echbem karka. All right, now. Every time she gets an asset after she's married, so remember now, here's the story. The principal of that asset belongs to her, but any derivative that it produces, any dividend that it produces, is going to belong to the husband. And so basically now, it's a very interesting, but think about it, what she's going to have to do now with every asset that comes into her possession after she gets married, she's going to have to roll it into a karka so that it could create dividend. So now, this is what the Mishnah is going to teach us. Now, so let's say she gets money after she's married. Yilak echbem karka. So here's what she's going to have to do with the money. She's going to have to buy property. V'huach haperos, and the husband's going to enjoy the peros. Paris to Lucia Minakaka. Let's say she gets fruit, meaning after she's married, so relative dies and the relative left her fruit. Now it's interesting. What is fruit? Fruit is not peros. Out of context, I sound crazy. So but in other words, it's an asset. So now it's metaltolin. So Paris atlushin minakarka. So what do you do with that fruit? So yilakech mem karka. So once again, which it's an asset that came into her possession after she's married. So it's rolled now into a property. V'ochal Paris. Now again, she's the owner of the principal. Obviously, she's the owner of that property. But now the husband's going to receive the dividends. Paris mechubar mekarka. If we have a fruit that is connected to the ground, so Amar Meir, so now gets a little bit tricky. Meaning, so now she's inheriting property with fruit connected to the ground. Shamino so kamu yafa beperos v'kamu hi yafa below peros. So now what you have to do is you have to make an appraisal of the property with and without the land, the fruit that's currently on it. Figure the difference. Because basically, the peros that are connected to the ground is also considered Karen, it's considered principal, and so those right now have to also be rolled over into more property. V'chachamim omrim hamechubarim lekarka shelo, and the chachamim say no. On this point, the chachamim say we're going to disagree. If she inherits a land and that land has fruit on it, so the land is her Karen, and the fruit belongs to the husband. That's it. Chachamim omrim mechubarim lekarka shelo v'atlushim min hakarka shela. And once again, we're going to also make the same point once again, that if she inherits fruit that are detached from the ground, the fruit that are detached from the ground, that's considered an asset. That's, and then that has to be rolled over into property, and he's going to be able to enjoy the dividends. And v'atlushim min hakarka shela v'yalakech mem karka v'ochal peros. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon basically gives us a way to view this. Now, as the Gemara itself is going to point out at the end of today's daf, Rabbi Shimon is not necessarily disagreeing with the Tanna Kamma, although there may be a minor disagreement, which we'll get to at the end of today's daf. But really what Rabbi Shimon's doing is just giving us a way to view it. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Makom Shiyafa Kocha Bechnisa Sa, where her position is strengthened at the beginning of the marriage, Hara Kocha Bechnisa Sa, her position is going to be weakened at the end of the marriage. And Makom Shahara Kocha Bechnisa Sa, and in a place where her position is going to be weakened at the beginning of the marriage, Yafa Kocha Bechnisa Sa, her position is going to be strengthened at the end of the marriage. If all that made no sense to you, Ketzad. So the Gemara says, let's illustrate exactly what this means. Paris Mechubarim Lekarka. Let's say we have fruit that's connected to the ground. Now remember, that's a machloket Shiramei and the Chachamim, but we're going to side right now with the opinion of the Chachamim. So fruit that's connected to the ground. So again, she got married and now she inherited land, and on the land was fruit. So bichnisasa shalom. So when bichnisasa at the beginning of the marriage, meaning when introduced to this property. So how is it going to be divided? She'll get the land. He'll get the fruit. Uviyitziyasa shalom. Now, upon exit from the marriage, so who does that fruit belong to? That fruit belongs to her. So you see that at the beginning of the marriage, horikocha, right? Her position is weakened, meaning the fruit doesn't belong to her. At the end of the marriage, at the termination of the marriage, that fruit does belong to her. Hatulushim in akarka. Now let's go the other way. Now let's talk about where she inherits just fruit which are detached from the ground. Bichnisasa shela. So at the onset, meaning when she inherits those fruit, so that's an asset. That asset belongs to her. Now again, you have to roll it into land so that he gets dividends, but it belongs to her. Uviyitziyasa, however, at the termination of the marriage, shelo, that fruit belongs to him because he gets the peros. And when I say he gets the peros, I mean he owns the peros. So that means it belongs to him. So just two examples of basically what we just learned in the Mishnah, where fruit that are connected to the land at the onset belongs to him, at exit belongs to her. Fruit detached from the land at the onset belongs to her, but at termination of the marriage belongs to him. Okay. Investment strategy. There's a lot in today's daf, is there not? There really is a lot. Okay. Investment. How
could it belong to him? When they get divorced, she's no longer responsible to.
I understand that. The Paris, once they're detached from the ground, belong to him. And we're discussing now, not the Paris that were detached after their marriage, after the divorce. After the divorce, they have nothing to do with one another. Meaning that before the divorce, it was harvest. And now you have the land, and you have all the fruit that was harvested from the land. And they get a divorce. So that fruit belonged to him? meaning during the marriage, she gets the peiros. Okay, pshita. So the Gemara starts off like this. Here's some obvious investment advice. Now, when I say investment advice, what I mean is as follows. Meaning that, as we just learned now in the Mishnah, anytime that she receives an asset during the marriage, so that asset now has to be rolled over into land. And basically, what you have to do is roll it over into the best real estate possible. So what the Gemara is going to tell us now is, what is considered a better real estate investment? Pshita, aru bate ara. If given a choice between land and a house, meaning a land that yields fruit or produce versus a housing. So, obviously, now I understand, I'm not giving general investment advice. We're talking about now how to create a stable and solid vehicle so that both parties will be acceptable. So land is better. So Rashi points out, land is better. Houses deteriorate. Houses need a lot of upkeep, and houses just depreciate. I know we don't experience that in our day and age, but land is better. The Gemara says it's a Dover Pasha. Bate v'dikle. Now let's say that for whatever reason, produce yielding land is just simply not an option, and your two choices are either land with house on it, or dikle, or palm trees. So, bate. So, Gemara says housing is better. Palm trees, explains Rashi, dries, and so therefore, once again, it's not as solid an investment. Dikle v'ilane, palm trees versus other fruit trees, dikle. Palm trees are better. Okay, I don't understand, but it's okay. From the Gemara standpoint,
well, it's without fruit.
Okay, good. I'm just good. Ilane vigufne, fruit tree versus a vineyard. Ilane, fruit tree is a more solid investment. Abba zardasto pera de kavre. Now, let's say, what does she inherit after they get married? She inherits a forest of some sort of tree, ozradin, I'm not really sure, a bean tree, and a fish pond. Amrila peri ve amrila karna. Now, once again, what did we learn back in our Mishnah? That if she gets a land with fruit on it, the fruit are fruit and the land is a land. That asset belongs to her and the fruit belongs to the husband. Here now we're going to be discussing things which are a little bit unclear in terms of how to categorize them. So this is strict accounting. So fish pond and what kind of tree is it? What is he? Has he translated? Okay, it doesn't help me. Okay, good. So some say that it's considered a Paris, and some say it's considered a Karen. It's considered a principal asset. Klal v'milsa. Now the Gemara says, look, here's the general rule: gizo machliv pera. If it regenerates, it's a pre. So obviously, fruit regenerates. So that's a pre. I mean, the very definition of a pre is it regenerates. Anger the machlif, it doesn't regenerate karna, so it's considered an asset. So a fish pond, so it's debatable. Whether or not the fish within the pond are something which considers regenerating, and therefore it's considered a pre. And that means then that if she inherits the fish pond, she'll obviously get the land, but the husband is going to get all the fish. If, however, the entire thing is considered an asset, so that means that all of it belongs to her. Mm-hmm. And again, well, you have to figure out how to roll the fish over into a land, but in other words, it belongs to her. I'm Rabbi Zera, I'm Rabbi Yoshi, I'm Rabbi Yana, I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Yoshi, I'm Rabbi Yana. Hagonev la behema mulog. I'm going to make an executive decision. Let's stop over here. Okay, we got more accounting to do in terms of determining whether something is considered a Karen or a Pri. And again, the basic difference now is that when she inherits it, it's a question of who does it belong to. Karen belongs to her, Paris belong to the husband. So stay tuned. We're going to do a little bit more accounting work tomorrow.